It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee. And somewhere out there, let's try this. Adam, are you around?
I am here.
There.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Adam is not in his usual corner of this tiny little room today. He actually is probably going to get the award for the longest distance listener, talker, whatever today. What's the name of the place? Costa what? Rica? Is that right?
Yeah, we're in Costa Rica for spring break. Just decided to get away with the kids and definitely picked a good week to do it according to all the weather reports from back home.
Well, assuming it's nice there, you're absolutely right because it's not here. That I think the rain.
Yeah, it sounds pretty awful.
Yeah, I think the rain is done now finally, or almost done anyway. But coming in over the Butler Bridge, it was still raining like crazy, but it was also telling us that it's going to clear up. So maybe, I don't know if they've got the biggest squeegee crew in the world out of the tournament, but I sure hope so. It's going to take them everything they've got to get this thing playable again. Already been postponed for the finish until Monday, and I wouldn't want to see it get any worse. But, you know, it's tournament week and anything can happen, especially now they moved it back to March. Those of you who go back a ways in the 40 years of the tournament know that anything can happen in March around here. And it makes it pretty exciting sometimes. It's going to be chillier, but bright sunny. I tell you, after all this rain, those guys are going to be knocking the pins down when they do get to play again because the greens have got to be holding like crazy. So if you're a golf fan, either put it on TV or get out there. And if you're just driving around the neighborhood, please remember that the town is full of people who don't know their way around very well. They're here to spend a lot of money and have a good time. So give them some space on the roads and so on. And hopefully we'll make this into a wonderful event where the city prospers and the beaches prosper and so on and so forth. But I digress. I want to welcome everybody to the show. If you're a regular listener, thanks for always being there. You're the ones that carry us through. And if you're new to the show, maybe you're out of town or just going out to the tournament or whatever and happen to catch it, try to stick around for the hour. We'll always promise you that you'll learn something from either from us or from a caller. You just literally never know. That's the beauty of unplanned talk radio. Whatever happens, happens. Otherwise, we'll just do what everybody else does and talk about what we want. But if you want to change it, pick up the phone, dial 904-222-8255 or 222-TALK, and the callers will be put to the head of the line, and we'll change the subject to whatever is on your mind today, be it golf, money, or the war in Ukraine, or anything else. So before we get down into the market, I must say a very special happy birthday to be Adam's mother. It would be Maggie and Annie's mother. And it just happens also to be my wife of almost 50 years. And you will frequently hear her referred to as my research department, which she mans all by herself. And we have a little applause from the control room going on. So an additional happy birthday goes out. Anyway, I guess it's a good day for a birthday. There's not much else to do, except we are going to go get a free lunch for my daughter. So things are good in paradise here. Maybe not as good as paradise there, but nonetheless, wonderful. Anyway, those of you who carried over from the real estate show have already heard it was another one of those weeks in the market, but I've got some real interesting takes on it that you may like after Adam tells you what went wrong, and then I'll speculate a little. So take it away.
Well, it was, as you said, not a great week. Stocks continued to slide, but it wasn't without some buyers stepping in along the way. We saw a really big midweek rally, and Friday even opened up with a really big bump in the futures, but then they rolled over, and by the end of the day, everything was negative. Actually, by the beginning of the day, everything was negative. So just can't get any positive traction right now. That doesn't mean that we're not seeing some big up days, because we are. We saw one last week. We saw one this week. but the overall trend is still negative. And energy has been the only sector that's bucked that trend, climbing over 2% again this week. Consumer staples really got just destroyed this week. It lost almost 6%. That one is a bit confusing. I'm not sure I understand what the thinking was behind selling off that sector. That's usually a defensive sector. When you think about areas of the economy that are going to remain stable, if you're worried about a recession or things of that nature, consumer staples is usually one of them. And that was an interesting one. The falling market was more or less limited to the United States this week. Markets in Europe actually rallied. Germany and Spain gained over 3% each. France and Italy were both up over 1%. Some Asian markets didn't fare as well. Japan was down 4%, and China lost almost 6%. So kind of a mixed bag across the globe. One thing that kind of points to, though, is that maybe this week the trade wasn't about Ukraine. It really looked like it was an inflation trade this week, and that's why the U.S. market was off so bad. If you look at the yield on the 10-year Treasury, it did nothing but climb this week. It went back up to almost 2%, which drove bonds very, very negative. But that to me says this week was focused a bit more on domestic issues rather than Ukraine. And I think the longer this thing goes on and it's limited to an Asian land war, the more apparent that will be that we start to focus back inward instead of looking at global macroeconomic events, which is a good thing. One area that hasn't been hit as hard lately has been mid and small cap stocks. Both indexes are in a technical correction right now, but since the Ukraine invasion began, both indexes are actually up. The Russell 2000 is up almost 2%, while the mid-cap, the S&P mid-cap 400 index is up almost 1%. Another interesting thing I saw was that the S&P 500 equal weight ETF is up just slightly during that time. So it seems like the lower you go down on the cap weight scale, the better off things are right now, which is also an interesting trade that I do. Well, it's a little confusing, to be honest. You would think it would be the opposite. If people are so worried about inflation and a domestic recession, those should be the areas that would be hit the hardest. So just something to keep an eye on. Another really weird phenomenon going on right now, while stocks are sinking, earnings estimates over the next 12 months keep surging. That means that our investors are changing their views of what those future earnings are worth to them. So the investors are telling us that they're willing to pay less right now for higher earnings than we saw last quarter and last year. And that likely has to do with rising interest rates, or at least the threat of increased rates. So that, again, goes back to why I thought this week's trading was more about interest rates than about Ukraine.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. But there's some other things that happened this week that we'll get into. First off, Adam and I exchanged a little correspondence this week that said, can't we just get a week of Wednesdays? It's been the last two Wednesdays have been really good, surrounded by a pool of red on each side. But this week, things are a little bit different. I'll get into it more after the break, and we will have a trivia question after the break as well. And I will start it out with an observation that you may or may not be thinking about. So stay put, don't go anywhere, and we'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
I'm Van Wee.
Adam's out there somewhere? No, Adam?
I am.
Oh, okay, there. You came through. We've been...
Yeah, there was just a delay there.
There's just a delay, okay. But that's not a problem. We are here to answer any questions, as usual, 904-222-8255. Trivia question, as usual, sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. It's really sneaking up hard on tax time, as everybody is probably well aware. I've got an IRS question for trivia this week. In 2021, IRS received 282 million phone calls. How many were actually answered to the nearest million? So it's kind of a shot in the dark if you don't happen to know these things. But it's interesting because it shows you that things are a mess up there in D.C., and I don't see it getting any better. And, in fact, this year, the first thing I put in my notes was that this week Joe Biden and Jen Psaki stepped in a hot, steaming pile of Putin. They cannot continually pick out new people or new things to blame for what's going on here. The blame is 100% policy-oriented, and it's got to change. And they are both, shall we say, not telling the truth. Neither of them is telling the truth. And it seems to have become chronic situation there, and I don't know what we're going to do about it, but it's very concerning to me that we're in the condition we're in, both from an international viewpoint and from a domestic policy viewpoint. Something's got to give soon. But meanwhile, there's kind of an interesting phenomenon that happened this week that if you're kind of a market-type weirdo like Adam and I are, you notice that in the middle of this week, there was a date that was March 9th. Now, I don't know how many of you automatically click into gear when I say March 9th, but March 9th of 2009 was the end of 18 months of abject misery in the market, and it started out on that day down, immediately turned up, and never looked back. That day was Wednesday, or was March 9th. This week, we had a March 9th. Now, not everything about this week was bad. That day looked like it might be the beginning. So I went back and took a look at what's going on and found out that if you start on the close of business on March 8th, so we're starting out a new slate March 9th, the S&P rose 0.8% for that period. The Dow rose 0.95% for the same period, and the NASDAQ rose 0.38% for the period. So if this happens to be the, I would call it one of the biggest coincidences ever, but if March 9th really did start the end of this, wouldn't that be interesting? So next week we'll see if that is carrying on at all. But I just got kind of a kick out of it because that date to me was so important. I remember the misery everybody had been in, and it was on March 9th that we couldn't begin to tell. In fact, we were so shell-shocked that I was not willing until, I believe it was right around the 4th of July, to look in the mirror and say, I think it's really over. That's how bad the 18 months were.
You weren't the only one.
I know.
That took a while to adjust to that. I actually have something about that, ironically.
Really?
But the current level of bearish sentiment towards the stock market is actually the highest since June of 2009.
No kidding.
Now, keep in mind the market bottom, when you said on March 9th, and the market sentiment hit the lowest in June of that same year.
Yeah.
But ironically, by June, the stock market had rallied 35% off its low before sentiment started to switch. Talk about a contrarian indicator.
Yeah, I guess I wasn't the Lone Ranger, huh?
No. What if you had missed that first 35% of the recovery? That hurts.
Funny you should bring that up. I have a couple of stats. You know how we've said for years and years and years that if you miss the best 7 days in the market every year, you won't ever make any money? Well, we've got a study here that works with the top five. So let's see what would happen. Historically, first off, give the longer term, the odds of making money overnight, I mean one day, are slightly better than 50-50. It's about 52% that of days are actually up days. Are you willing to hold on for a month? Then your positive return improves to 60%. How about if you're willing to stay in for 2 years? Then your odds of making money are over 75%, But if you have 10 years, the frequency of positive returns improves to nearly 90%. And you go out to 15, and there has not been a period of time that the market lost money. And I'm not telling everybody that they better have 15 years left for everything, but if you look at your odds, they're not bad. So let's take it on a buy-and-hold basis. We'll put $100 into the S&P 500 in 1990. That would be worth, at the end of 2021, that $100 is worth $997, almost tenfold. Now, let's say you could miss out on the five worst days each year. Your $100 would be, you ready? $116,000. If you could just miss those worst 5 days. But what happens if you missed out on the best 5 days? This is what makes us stay where we are. Your $100, if you miss the best 5 days a year since 1990, would be a whopping $11 today. All the money is made on so few days that if you guess, you will lose. That's the bottom line on this thing. I can't put it any better than that. Can you, Adam?
That about sums it up.
It does. And I wish we could find a way to do it. It would be delightful and everybody would be real happy. But we can't. We haven't so far, and we can't. Got one of those.
Nobody has. If you look at any study about market timing, they all conclude the same thing. There is no way to do it and make money. You will lose more money by market timing than you will by buying and holding.
Yep. And I know we have clients. I know we have listeners. I know we have friends and family. Everybody is concerned about what's going on. But it's not going to kill you this time unless the nuke package comes out. And I have never lived my life based on what happens if we get a mushroom cloud. It's always out there. I talk about it all the time. All bets are off if the nukes come out. But I do think that that even the lunacy of Putin doesn't go that far. And boy, do I hope I'm right. So that's our look at what to do about it. And I promise you, for all of our clients, we'll do plenty of worrying for you, so you just get a good night's sleep, right? It works for me.
We will do our fair share.
Yes, we will do it. All right, what do you see next week? I have no clue. Volatility is the only thing for sure.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, that's the one thing that we were willing to predict this year, is that it would get more volatile. Now, we didn't know about a war in Ukraine when we said that. We were talking about interest rates. But, boy, have we been right about that. It's been volatile, and I don't see a catalyst next week to fix that. But at the same time, that doesn't mean there won't be one. I think that whatever fixes this is going to come out of left field, and it'll be something like the end of a ceasefire or a victory on one side or the other, or I'm not sure. I don't think anyone can predict it accurately, but I think it will come out of left field, and I think that's what will be what changes it, and you certainly don't know when it's going to come.
And as we have long said, the market itself is always ahead of today. The market's looking forward 6, 8, 9 months, and the action you see today is reflective of the expectations out that far. Well, what will have happened 8 months ago, or 8 months out from now on the show that's equivalent to this, what will have already taken place? And the answer to that is we'll have had an election. Now, right now, government policy is one of the major things that's messing up the market, our lives, the whole thing. If that doesn't change, I look for kind of a tsunami in the election in November. Now, if we can just get it to the point where the only thing Biden has is a veto pen, not a policy ability to, not ability to pass bad policy, I think the market will reflect that and be very strongly positive. So who knows for sure, but this is the kind of thing we sit around and think about when we can't quite understand who's thinking what just by the daily activity in the market. So assuming we're right, and I have to at this point assume that we're right, I'm looking for better things, although you may not see them in the very shortest of the short run. I believe it will get better. All right, we'll get into all kinds of more fun topics when we get back. Trivia questions still out there, and I think you'll like what's coming up. We always try to be a little upbeat after all the moral stuff. So don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Adam is remoting in today from sunny, beautiful Costa Rica. And as always, it seems these days, the communication lines are just incredible. It's just like you're sitting here talking to each other. I like it.
Yeah, I can tell there's a slight delay, but
yep,
it's not terrible.
Yeah, it's not quality, it's just timing. Yeah, exactly. All right, reminder, the trivia question is still out there. IRS received 282 million calls in 2021. How many did they actually answer to the nearest million? I think you might be surprised. The speaking of the IRS, their backlog of paper returns from 2020 now, this is 2020 filing season, the agency was holding at the end of the year 35.3 million returns were being held for manual review. So they're nowhere near caught up enough to actually process everything that we're about to start sending them. And I fear that the bottom line on this is that's why the administration is pushing us so hard to bump their budget up and double the number of IRS agents. And there is just no scenario in my mind that says that would be a good idea, wouldn't it? No. So we can hope, but we'll see. All right. Another piece of good news. If you want to invest like Nancy Pelosi, and of course, who wouldn't, because they made so much money, here's some good news. There, you may have heard that there's a group out there that calls itself something like Invest Like Pelosi. They figure out what the Pelosis are buying, and they get in on it, even though it's a little after when Pelosi does it, because she wants to get the big hit, of course. Well, there's a new exchange-traded fund out, and it tracks Nancy Pelosi's stock picks. How about that? Called the Insider Portfolio ETF, and the symbol INSDR. So that's the good news. You want to get some of this? You're investing just like Pelosi, although a little later. So the biggest run-up that's from the legislation she is involved with will be done. But they tend to do pretty well longer term. The bad news, it's on an exchange called MERJ, which, frankly, I'd never heard of. But it's an international exchange, and here's the bad news. It's a partnership with the United Nations. And I will promise you that as long as I live, I will not do business through an exchange or anybody else that partners with the UN unless they start changing their stance about the United States. And that is not going to happen. So if you're interested, you can look it up. INSDR. All right, back to the shores of the USA. Amazon. Are you staying up on Amazon, Adam? Did you get a chance?
Yeah, I saw the big news this week, the 28-for-1 stock split, and I think I might know the motivation behind that one, too.
Now, what do you think?
I personally, there's no real reason anymore to do a stock split. There used to be quite a few reasons. Now there's only one, in my opinion, and that's to get included in the Dow.
How about that? I came to that same conclusion without even talking to you. It's amazing.
And the reason for that, we've talked about it a lot on the show, but the Dow is a price-weighted index. It's very unusual in that way. There aren't a lot of those around, but the price of your share if it's too high, would dominate the index, and then basically the Dow would be Amazon, and Amazon would be the Dow if they allowed it in. So they won't let you in if your share price is too high. And so therefore you have to do something like what they're doing to get included.
And I bet there's a lot of people that didn't know that Amazon isn't part of the Dow. Yeah.
Surprising that it's not, considering the Dow is supposed to be the 30 largest companies in the country.
Well, I think that there's got to be a reason. There was always this competition when stocks started climbing up in the upper hundreds and then hit the fourth digit. Who's got the highest stock price and the biggest yacht, right? Something's changed. I know Bezos isn't there day-to-day because his yacht got delivered or is being delivered or whatever. But anyway, that change has got to reflect the current management's idea that they should be part of it. Now, they are part of the S&P 500, of course. That should not be a surprise to anybody. You know that they are not the priciest stock in the index? There is one that's even higher. You know what it is, Adam?
I mean, the obvious one would be Berkshire. I don't know if that's included, though.
Not the A-share.
Okay.
The highest one is a company called NVR. Now, what that is just a kind of a holding company for three home builders, and they have let the stock go into the 4,000-plus range, so obviously they don't care if they're going to be listed in the Dow or not, and that's fine with me. But I had never heard of it. There's one of the home builders that they own that actually did mean something to me when I looked them up, but I was kind of surprised when I listed them all out that they were so much bigger than the rest of them. Another thing, you know how many stocks are in the S&P 500?
Now, if I've ever heard a setup for a trick question, this is it. I don't know.
505.
Okay.
And you might say, why? Well, it's because certain companies like Alphabet have different share classes, and they're listed separately in the S&P, which I also wasn't aware of. I don't study the S&P very much day to day because I know what it is. It's the American large cap index, and it's the broad one. We know how it's weighted, and we like it a heck of a lot better than the Dow for all of that. Okay, so here, the average Dow stock is priced at $167.78. The median, funny this should come up right after we've been talking about it, the median is $164.06. They're almost identical. So guess what Amazon will be going to? Take a 20th of it, and you get something that's slightly under the median, about 139 and change. And my numbers are as of Wednesday night, so it could be a little worse, a little better, doesn't matter. But they're going to be down in the second half of the index, kind of hiding around a little bit. And I got to believe that the only reason they would do that is exactly what you said. I think they're doing it so that they can get into the Dow. And frankly, I don't blame them. Think of all the diamond shares and things like that that are going to be forced to buy their stock.
Well, there's certainly a prestige factor that goes along with that as well. And that can't be really calculated on a monetary basis, but it definitely exists. To say you're a Dow company, that still means something.
It does, I think. It's kind of a feather in their cap. Some companies like GM have been in and out of it several times. It's actually got a very colorful history. Even before it went up to 30 stocks, it's got a colorful history. And if you ever want to read about it, just Google it or Bing it or something, and you can read up on how it's evolved over the years. But I still disagree with their methodology. But you know, they're so big and so common that that's how people talk about the market. And quite frankly, we're as guilty as anybody else. So that's what's happening out there. Now, if I told you that millionaires are asking to be taxed, what would you say?
Of course they are.
Yeah. And can you get your tongue out of your cheek yet?
No, I'm serious. They always say that publicly. No,
yeah, that's
what they
true.
Do in private is a completely different story, but there are countless very well-known millionaires and billionaires that routinely ask to be taxed more.
This came out of Davos. And whenever I hear the word Davos, I sort of shudder, because that means the uber-liberals with the fancy airplanes. 102 of them wrote that they wrote to the government, said they want to be taxed more. Now, you know what percentage of U.S. millionaires that is? It's 0.045% of millionaires. So any of you millionaires out there listening, if you disagree, trust me, you're in the majority of millionaires that are not asking to be taxed more. They set up a website for that a long time ago. If you want to give them more money, give them more money. Just don't drag me along with you. All right, we've got to take one more break. We'll be right back with some more fun and games. The lines are open. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And that little bitty delay is all the way from Costa Rica, so it's really pretty small, all things considered. All right, lines are open, 904-222-8255. Trivia questions still out there. Out of 282 million phone calls IRS received during last year, in 2021, how many did they actually answer? Now, I don't think that means callbacks. I mean answer while you're on the phone waiting, I believe, although that was not made real clear in the research I was reading, but that's the way we're going to specify it for now. All right, inflation. You can't really can't do a show like this without talking about inflation. And you've probably noticed the excuses du jour. They've now flopped over on Putin. But that wasn't what they were saying a couple weeks ago, interestingly enough. Those of you, I'm sure, who listened to the show were probably 100% just affixed to the TV during the State of the Union address. I assume you were, Adam, right?
Oh, yeah, of course.
And just like me, I wouldn't miss it for the world, right? Okay, let's face it. Most of us read up on it after the fact. But guess who was the villain in the State of the Union? It wasn't Putin. It was American corporations. Huh. Elizabeth Warren started spreading around that the core of the inflation was really because of corporation concentration and a lack of competition. Now, can you think of any way that might resemble the truth? Because I can't.
No, there's a. I ranted about this a few weeks ago.
I'm not surprised. This concept shows you, first off, that she's totally unqualified to do what she's doing. She couldn't even get a job with the Consumer Financial Protection Division that she created. But I digress. Anyway, it was corporations. And then apparently that didn't sit so well. You know, we have a thing in government called the Sherman Antitrust Act, the monopoly-busting courts and so on. They have broken up Standard Oil, AT&T, you know, all those things. The upshot of that is that we have plenty of competition today. There is no word of truth in this article the way I see it. Well, now, let's talk about the real problem with inflation. If you're a monetarist, a devotee of Milton Friedman, like most of us on our side are, you understand that inflation is a monetary phenomenon. It means too much money chasing too few goods and services. We're getting a little clinking in the background here, but try to bear with us. This is long-distance stuff. No. The Nancy Pelosi and company submitted to the Congress in the middle of the night a 2,700-page, $1.5 trillion spending package, and the only thing that got pulled out of it was more money for COVID. Other than that, it's a take-it-or-leave-it thing. Well, they took it because there's enough in there that everybody who voted has something they wanted in it, apparently. I don't know how soon they're going to allow us to look at it certainly didn't learn anything this morning before coming into the show, but by next week I'm hoping we know a lot of it. Now, $1.5 trillion spending, it may not sound like a lot against what we're doing, but this is not taking place over a huge amount of time, and there is no way that I personally can think of this as not becoming even more inflationary. That sound reasonable to you, Adam?
Yeah, I was very disappointed to read that. And the only good thing was that they did take out that COVID spending?
Really?
I mean, what? We haven't even spent all the stuff we've passed earlier. And is anyone really thinking about it anymore? I mean, I just don't understand this need, quote-unquote need, to spend money without justification. What is the outcome supposed to be of all this?
There should be a name.
It's very frustrating.
Yeah, there should be a name for spending for the sake of spending, aside from lunacy, which comes up to me. All right, that's the bad news. Good news is it looks like BBB or BBBB, that's either Build Back Better or Build Back Better BS, that seems to be dead. But if you can't get it all at once and you're in Congress, how do you get it? Incrementally. So here come a couple of obviously left-wing congresspeople, and they are representatives from states that have high taxes, state and local taxes. Well, they've obviously been very upset since the TCJA imposed a limit of $10,000 deduction for a taxpayer for state and local taxes, or SALT deductions, as they're called. So in the BBB proposal, there were two of them. One of them raised it back to $800,000. The other proposal was to raise it to, $80,000, and the other one was to raise it to $60,000. Now, that would save a lot of rich people a lot of tax money, right? So in the parlance of the government, when people don't have to pay as much taxes, that's called a cost to the government, because they sit there and look at all the money that all of us make and they say, well, that's mine, and anything we leave for you to keep is a gift, but it's a cost to us. They even have a name for it. They call it a tax expenditure. So how do we deal with this in Washington? Well, we couldn't get it through BBB. So let's just put out a standalone law and try to force it through Congress. And that's what these two folks are doing. Tom Malinowski, Democrat from New Jersey, and Katie Porter, Democrat from California. So imagine, they represent a lot of people with a lot of money. So they're trying to push this puppy through, and I hope they don't get it, of course. But how did they justify it? Because it would be a very, very difficult thing for a Democrat congressman to look everybody in the eye and say, I know we're just giving tax breaks to rich people, which is exactly what they're trying to do. So they had to justify it, and they justified it in D.C. terms as a cost savings. In other words, it'll raise taxes for the government. So it will, quote, save the government $150.9 billion. Well, how can you do that when you're lowering raising taxes for people? Well, how does it save the government? I don't get that exactly. So here's how it goes. In CBO speak, Congressional Budget Office, which has to do exactly what they say, they took a 10-year period. Here's how you do it. You take the expected tax revenue for the next 10 years, assuming no change in the law. Then you add the revenue stream for 2026 through 2031, when the current $10,000 cap is eliminated. The sum of those cash flows, the current first four and the later 6 years, gives you the cost of the law, as they use that term in D.C., then you match it up against the second 10-year period, which would be what happened if we changed it today and raised it to $60,000 so that people saved money. Well, then, of course, the first 4 years, we've got all these rich people paying less taxes, it's going to be a big cost to the government. The savings comes in the final 6 years when there would otherwise not be a limit, but there is a limit, so there's an actual savings according to them in each of the out years, six through or 5 through 10, and that added up together actually makes money for the government to the tune of $151 billion. You're laughing.
I knew where you were going.
Yeah, I figured you would.
The CBO, is their rules are broken, for one. Everybody knows it. I don't blame them for scoring it that way, but the fact is
they have to.
That's got to change. That is so disingenuous.
Yep, so look for the rich people to get that tax break. So if they get it through, take advantage of it if you're qualified. All right, in the year 2021, the IRS received 282 million phone calls and managed to answer 31 million of them, a whopping 11%. Impressed? Not this guy. So if you're looking for some help from IRS this year, I would suggest finding a good CPA or something like that. I just don't see the chances of getting a phone call answered from IRS when they've got this kind of backlog as being anything worth trying. All right, well, we have to go. Good luck to the tournament. We'll see you next week, same time. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.